Hi, welcome to today's episode of The A-Word, presented by me, Kentaro Oe, Director of Design at Aludio. This season, we're talking to our guests about attention, AI, and ad tech, exploring the burning questions, future trends, and challenges surrounding all things creative and advertising. I'm joined today by Ada Paris. Ada is a tech futurist, keynote speaker, and activist. She's the chair of Mental Health First Aid England and the chair of the Center for Culture Value Advisory Group. She's also currently launching her own leadership transformation program called Seats. Ada, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me here.
Great to have you. Ada, so you're kind of in all these different buckets, and I guess I want to start off my first question to you of just kind of understanding all of your experiences and where you're coming from, because you speak on topics such as technology, spirituality, ancestry, all these kind of intersecting.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, how do you think your experiences have kind of brought you to this amalgamation of all these topics? And if you can kind of break down like what each piece is for you.
Thank you. A beautiful question, because I feel like I have finally got to the place where the question I've been asking as a child since childhood is actually, I've got to that place now. And the question I ask is, what type of ancestor do you want to be? So born in London to a Nigerian Igbo father, Guyanese, South American, Amerindian mother. So ancestry wise, my name Ada, all firstborn Igbo daughters are Ada. And so there's this bit around that as growing up, there was always this trying to understand my ancestry and where I came from and what names mean and language mean. And if you spoke to my mother, my family, they would say that as a child, I was a social justice warrior. Injustice at any kind would make me cry. That was a thing that would really get me. And now with hindsight, I now also know that I'm neurodivergent. So I have ADHD and borderline autism. And so that really helped. I can now look back on much of my childhood and understand why I was into sensory things and all sorts of things. But I've grew up always asking questions and that why, and trying to understand the nuance of things. With my African and Caribbean and Amerindian family, when I was growing up, I kind of flitted between the two, really trying to understand my relationship with Africa and the more indigenous side of it, and then South America. And I kept jumping between those. But at school, I did physics, chemistry, maths, because I saw those things as art rather than sketching. I saw mathematical equations and problems and all those things as forms of art. And so I realized that what I had done for most of my career is follow this path of where's the art in something? Where's the creativity in something? And because I seemingly jumped around, so the earlier part of my career, people used to say, oh, you're always jumping around doing different things. I think you'll be great in my business, but I don't quite know what you'll do because you could do a bit of everything. Whereas now I've been able to harness that. So I am now able to speak the different languages of these different spaces. So worked in education at business school. So I know education, learning, design. I worked in advertising, but the business side. So built a summer school, built an advertising school, wrote white papers about the nature of communication between advertising agencies and brands. Then went into tech and worked for Telefonica and used those skills to design Wira's first technology accelerator program in the UK. So that was Telefonica's. And so from there, then went off and had this creative world in Burning Man and all sorts of things and came back. And suddenly I found myself in this space where people were asking me to talk about my journey and my brand identity. And I'm like, I don't know what that means. I'm just being me, and all these different things and different ways of being me is me. Yeah. And trying to fit into what other people thought I should be or how I should be was the thing that stifled me the most. And so how I ended up now speaking about the topics that I do is because I got to a point where I refused point blank to speak about being a Black woman in advertising or a Black woman in tech.
Sure.
I mean, there's so much more to me, and
Definitely.
there's so much more to my ideas. And I'm not saying that I'm an expert. What I'm saying is I'm really good at asking questions.
Yeah. I
So
love that.
that's how it's all come together.
Interesting. I think I think it's quite inspiring to just even hear that. And you spoke about you were just tying it back to your childhood of like kind of being so self-curious and coming back to this point in your life now and just truly understanding like who you are because of that. And I'm curious, do you think because you've had a hand in just so many you're kind of a jack of all trades, you're kind of doing things over here, do you think each of those moments or each of those experiences uncovered something about yourself and
Oh, completely.
that kind of like
Completely.
culminated
And
in
I love that I'm always discovering something new about myself. I think I have always really seen life as a series of experiments. And I'm really good at just going, I'm going to try. I will teach myself the basics. There's always going to be people who are more, knowledgeable about this. But if I understand the basics, then it gives me a starting point, and I'll try. And if it doesn't work, that's okay. Let it go. So that's been my approach to most of the things that I've done. And I think in many ways, interestingly, I think the pandemic has created more space for people like me, because pre-pandemic, the stuff I was talking about, people were going, it's too weird. And because everything was broken and we had to stop and everybody had these existential crises, people just went, we need something different. Oh, you know that stuff that you were talking about, Ada? So tell me a bit more about that.
Yeah, you're just ahead of
So, yeah.
the
And
curve.
so I have learned that I'm an artist in the Alain de Botton's description of art is about changing the way we experience the world. So we're all artists. So I don't have to have gone to a university to do a particular thing, because I think that we use language and these ideas of boundaries to marginalize and keep people out, rather than opening up and being expansive and not being so reductionist about our ideas about what technology is and who has access and what the idea of the future, that's a whole different conversation.
Yeah, definitely. I want to kind of take a step back and just kind of break down the different parts of your career and try to understand like what did you take away from each piece? And the piece I'm curious about first is your experience of tech, digital, and advertising. What period was that? What does your experience there look like? And what do you think you took away from that, looking back at it?
So advertising, I worked at the Institute of Practitioners in Advertising, so the membership organization for agencies, and I started there 2004 in the information department. So I was the person that agencies would send their briefing and go, what magazines do 20-year-old guys in Tel Aviv or wherever look read? And I'd get onto the database and do a search, find the details and send it to them. And I went, I can't do this all the time. I need to do something else. So I volunteered to look after some of the committees and ended up looking after direct marketing strategy, business communications, and ethnic diversity. So I facilitated those committees for the advertising industry, and very quickly realized that actually looking after several of them meant that I was kind of this linchpin, because I could see what was happening across. And now I understand pattern recognition. So I could see what were the conversations that were happening in these different groups, normally in isolation. I would go, well, you need to talk to this person and you need to talk to this. And so became really good at connecting dots and connecting people. So that became one. And from there, I moved from information to then starting to run, look after committees and worked with the direct marketing. It was really interesting at that time, direct marketing. Many people who wanted to work in advertising wanted to work in the sexy agencies and not direct marketing, because they thought it was just making envelopes and, charities.
Yeah,
And
mail push.
so we talked about how do we widen the diversity of the industry, not just in terms of ethnicity and gender, but also in terms of lived experience and understanding and approach. And so what I did with the team, or with the chairs, was actually looked at the process of advertising and went, what happens? So first you have account handling, Then you have, strategy, then you have creative, then you have production, and then, so what happens is the journey of a brief through an agency. And so I designed the summer school program to replicate that. So regardless of where you thought you wanted to work as an inter as a person coming into the industry, you had to do 2 weeks in each of those departments because it meant that you understood what came before you, what came after you, and what would happen if you slowed, delayed the process. So that came from pattern recognition, that came from working at London Business School, understanding learning design to bring that into advertising. And then gently moved over into another advertising school where I then started to understand more about tech. And I've always been a geek. I fell in love. I wanted to be an astronaut. I fell in love with space because I fell in love. I wanted to be Uhura and I wanted to marry Mr. Spock and I wanted to go up into the stars and all of that stuff. So I've always had that. And in the tech world, when I first was entering into that space, I didn't really hear many people talking about what I used to call my hippie side. Well, where's the human? What happens to this? And so I really found my voice in the tech space more than I did in advertising because I had this childhood curiosity about technology anyhow. So each one, it was almost like a waterfall effect that each fed into the other. Until I got to the point of working with the Friday Club, and I haven't been in touch with them for years, but it was beautiful because you used to bring together technology startups and advertising to learn from each other. So I would look at, for example, I would look at how is blockchain impacting advertising? How could it potentially impact advertising, not just in terms of product delivery service, but in terms of how we work? And then we would bring in startups who were working on blockchain and bring in advertising people to learn and to experience together and mentor. And so you can kind of see how each question I had led me into another role that would help me understand that question.
Very interesting. I'm sensing a pattern. You already talked about patterns, but in your career and I guess in your behavior, I'm sensing a pattern of, maybe diving into something and then just asking questions of like, how does this fit into the larger picture? Or like, what happens? You said it before, even in a brief stage, right? Of a advertising brief, understanding what comes before, what are the steps to get to this point? And then what comes after that? And you said the same thing also about yourself in terms of ancestry as well, that kind of like connecting, like you need to understand where you've been to understand where you're going, I suppose. Very.
Very, very great observation about how I am. That's how I operate. And it means that once I can understand where things fit in context, the bigger picture of things, then it's kind of the way that I read books, right? So I read it till I understand that bit, and then I'm done with the book. And it's horrible because I recognize how much effort people put into the books, but I have them next to me as reference points then, rather than sitting and reading through the whole thing, because once I recognize the pattern and I can see that pattern in another space, so blockchain and nature or quantum mechanics or what have you. Once I see where it is, I know I have an idea of how it's going to repeat.
Interesting. That kind of leads into my second qu or my next question, just because, I think especially in the world of tech, there's just new innovations, emerging technology innovations, and things just kind of moving at a very rapid pace, in terms of change. I think people can feel left behind, but I'm curious for you, just understanding the larger picture and maybe sensing patterns or understanding what might come next. Do you s feel grounded in that sense of just I kind of see this pattern, especially in this tech world, at which you have direct experience in. Just curious if that still overwhelms you, like it overwhelms me, or do you feel very like grounded and kind of calm about it?
I think with everything that's going on in the world at the moment, it's very difficult to feel grounded. And we have to remember that nothing is in isolation. So there's so many things that we are all in constant states of flux. In terms of technology, I feel so. Firstly, I would have to distinguish between digital technologies and all other forms of technology, because I think that we have quite a reductionist view, because when we talk about tech, we tend to talk about digital. And to me, all technology are things that we use to create relationships with self, other, and our environment. So it could be digital, it could be shamanic, it could be quantum mechanics, it could be belief systems. So if we are talking about digital technology, then I feel that we are almost in some ways going back to the source, and digital technology is finally catching up with and replicating nature. Because the original digital technology was very linear, A to B. And that's how things happened. It was just we needed cells and documents and all of these things to do from A to B, but the technology wasn't there to be able to really exist, or in the way that we are, that we don't experience anything in one sense. And now, if you think about it, we have blockchain, we have the metaverse, we have all of these things. Well, we have three. The example I used the other day, for I was doing a talk for some university students, and I said the talk was about social justice and art. And I said that the origins of social justice and art are cave paintings, because they were social. They were put in spaces that were social. And also, that when you look into it further, those cave paintings were in places where there were also acoustics. So you had a whole 360 experience. I said, isn't that what 360 camera is now? Isn't that what the metaverse is now? And we forget that all digital technology, everything is made possible by organic matter. Yes, all everything is made possible by organic matter. So really, aren't we just real distant cousins to the computer?
Interesting. Wow.
It's a very big idea, but I like to throw it there because it gets people to remember that what we are creating is creating us. The stuff that we're putting out there
Yeah.
is also, we are part of the feedback loop, and
Definitely.
that digital technology is only, you can map, if you look at it, you can map certain most digital technologies with something in nature. Whether or not we want to admit that is another thing. So when people say, I've created blockchain, you haven't really. Nature's created it. It's another iteration. And the tools and technologies that we have now have enabled us to do it in a different version, but it's always been there. So those are the patterns.
Absolutely fascinating. I feel like what a lot of the components that you're talking about kind of ladder up or are pieces of your overall theory of cyborg shamanism, which I definitely want to get into. Can you just give us a rundown of what that's about and how you came about it?
So the cyborg shamanism is a philosophy and a framework that I have given a name to. I wouldn't say that I've discovered it, I've just labeled it. And it is because I spent about 9 years mind mapping just these patterns that I saw, or words or things that I didn't quite know how they fit together or why. But I would notice something and go, I'm not quite sure what that is. I just need to put it down. So I'm going to put it on a mind map. But over a period of time, was able to bring that together. And it goes back to what I said earlier about technology, that I realized that it felt like, and this was, when was this? So 2017-ish is really some of the earlier times. I noticed that it felt like we were looking for a new religion, something external to ourselves to say, well, it's because of this, whether it's a belief system. So if you think about it, we had belief systems. So I was brought up Catholic, to believe in a God that I cannot see, who helps me understand my relationship with myself, with other, and my environment. We had this kind of resurgence of, like, sometimes called psychedelic tourism. So the people going down the plant medicine route, I'm going to go and ingest something that is going to help me understand my relationship with self, other, and environment. We had the kind of the beginnings of the, I say beginnings, but the more general beginnings, the wider knowledge of AI, potential for AI, blockchain, those sorts of things, same thing, self, other, and environment. And at the time, I had a really good friend who was a quantum physicist, and she and I used to talk, and she goes, "What you're talking about is emergence." And so I realized that what we were doing is we give digital technology a hierarchy, and everything else we put down there. We go, "Oh, well, shamanic stuff and spirituality and all of those things, they're not really worth anything. Because we can capitalize on this." And we also got to have the conversation about who's we and who's capitalizing and where is it being extracted from, the knowledge and wisdom. So I looked at it and went, "Well, we're all just trying to do the same thing. The tools or the technologies are different." And so in that time, there was talk about cyborgs. And for me, a cyborg is you are using a form of technology to augment the biological. So a cyborg is could be considered a digital shaman. And a shaman could be considered an ecological cyborg because they're using plant medicine, spirituality, sound, what have you, to do the same thing. So suddenly I went, "Oh, even in my own linear thinking, I was like, it's cyborgs on one end and shaman in the other." So that's where it was originally born. But as I started to really explore more, I realized it's much bigger than that.
Gotcha.
And so the framework is, I mean, it's a long process, but the framework is a friend asked me to create an alphabet. She said, "Test it. Test your theory and see if you can create an alphabet and go through what's the A word that appears in all of those things that you see." And I was like, "Okay, anthropomorphism, balance, curiosity, diversity, experimentation." So I created this alphabet just to test, stress test it. And then I started to notice certain groupings. And then I was like, "Oh, well, the first bit is leave. So how do we leave the old ways behind? We keep talking about redefining the problem. We spend fortune, advertising spend fortunes on redefining the problem. Why, instead of redefining the problem, why don't we work out what are the values that we really want to embody, that we want? So leave the old ways, what are the values? Breathe. What's the tension in, what's holding us in tension? What's making us hold our breath? And what's the theory of change, a hypothesis of change that's going to help us just relax and let go of that and actually exhale? Grow. What are the tools, technologies, rituals, behaviors that we need to try and make those happen? Flow. What type of ancestor do you want to be? How are we going to make sure that this thing is still here, or we are more conscious about the things that we're putting out into the ether, and also recognizing with our egos that we don't have to be around to see that? And ground, which is the last one, last one is how do we turn it into kinship with the human and the more than human? And then you go back. And so it just became this way of seeing. And now I can't unsee it. And I see it in everything. And it's beautiful because it helps me really shortcut my understanding of things.
Definitely. That's absolutely fascinating. You mentioned a little bit before regarding artificial intelligence, and that's something we talk a lot about on the show. And I'm curious, well, like where does AI kind of fit into the system of cyber shamanism? And you know, I think a lot of people have noticeable fears and concerns about AI in general, but is there a way that this way of thinking can kind of steer AI specifically in a positive direction?
Great question. And it's something that the last year was definitely about that for me. So it was a really core focus because I asked myself that question of what type of ancestor do I want to be? And I ask it every day. And I had to work out what my first value is. And my first value is regeneration. So if we are talking about AI, then again, mapping different ideas. But if we look, so partner of mine, he works in water conservation, and I got him to explain to me how does nature regenerate itself, especially in relation to water. And he said, you need to have foundational species, you need to have the right air places. So if you have a stream and you poison the stream, if you poison it upstream, everything else is poisoned. Same with AI, right? So when he's talking about that, I'm same with AI. If the language models that we are building from are broken, are corrupt, are biased, then we're only going to get more bad. So for me, AI is like water. It's everywhere already. And we have to think about how do we make sure that we create the best conditions so that we don't poison it before it even gets out there. And that means that the core foundational value has to be regeneration. So when, and what I mean by that is if you are, and I spoke at a conference in Nuremberg for developers, which was amazing because I don't normally get to speak to them. And I went, look, if you're worried about the planet and the world and all of this stuff, and you're talking about you're not having children because of the way the state of the world is, and you're developing this stuff, your first value should be regeneration. That means that whatever the AI is, whatever you build, your measure of success should be how it's regenerating our systems and structures. That then changes the economic models because it has the two follow each other. Nobody's going to step off the hamster wheel unless there is some money motivation, which is sad, but that's the reality. So in order to do that, you have to change the system at the source, which means that the first bit of water, that spring, we have to make sure that everything around it involved has a vital role to play, but we also need to make sure we don't mess it up. And we've also got to admit that we are the ones messing it up.
Sure. Yeah. What an interesting analogy. I've never heard as it's just so vivid. You kind of answered the second part of the question I was going to ask, but in terms of, who is responsible for kind of maintaining or allowing it to kind of not fester poison. You mentioned developers. Do you feel like
All of
it
us.
into the companies, government, individuals, all of us.
All of us. It's very easy for us to negate our responsibility and go, well, I don't work in that space. And politics is not the people who sit in those buildings. Politics is the fact that you choose one bottle of water over another. That's a political decision. And if we recognize that that is politics rather than who's sitting there pontificating in, the House of Lords or wherever, then we all have a responsibility. It's like with my mental health first aid hat on, there I was part of a group which is an external to the organization, but there was a group that was doing some research around mental health. And they went on the street and they asked people, who's responsible for your mental health? And most people said the state, the NHS, the doctors. Nobody said them. We have to hold our hands up and go, we've all been a bit shit. And the minute we can hold the mirror and look at ourselves in the mirror and go, you know what? It's my ego that's getting in the way of all of this because we want to do better. We say we want to do better. We want to be vegan because of the animals and climate and what have you. And yet we'll still fly to Bali to do a yoga retreat because it makes you feel better than someone in downtown LA. We talk about I'm going to get rid of my stuff and I'm going to put it in the recycling bin where but I don't want to watch the news where it shows all the recycling is in Africa somewhere sitting and there's children playing. Oh, that's too depressing. But that's the crap that we've thrown away. So we have to look at we are part of that back to that thing of what we are creating is creating us. We can't just throw something away and forget about it because somehow there is a knock-on effect.
Definitely. Yeah, another topic that you speak about often, I think, kind of ties directly into that, which is sustainability, right? I think really thinking about even in digital tech, there's an element of reuse, and I'm curious, like, is that kind of what you mean by that when you speak about sustainability in tech and just sustainability in general?
Well, yes, but I think that it's easy to just cut it off there. And I think that we have to think about what's the impact we're having on the local communities around us.
Sure.
So when you're an organization and you say, oh, we've got a community, but you don't engage with the people who live around you. And the fact that, so I'll give you an example, is I'm working on a beautiful project at the moment with Friends of the Earth. And I'm really honored to be able to work with them to try and help local people in my area in Greenwich in Southeast London to understand their relationship with nature. And so what I've been doing is taking people on these nature walks, community leaders on these walks. And what I've discovered just by walking is that firstly, trees don't grow in straight lines, so you know that that's development. The fact that people where there are big buildings, the people who live in those big buildings normally have their health is severely impacted by the, because of the fact that there was so there's so much the buildings are warmer because of the concrete. So there's a temperature difference for because you live in those spaces, which means that your health is going to be impacted. That means that, you know, the fact that if the drains are blocked on the street, that that also impacts your body and your, you know, who you are. So then if you're a business and you're going, we're going to be sustainable and we're going to make sure we throw all our, recycle all our stuff, but the building that you're in is changing the temperature of the spaces of the people who live outside, how can you say that's community? So it's really easy for us to go, oh well, this is our bit. You know, it's like that saying, what just popped into my head, it's that saying of we're hiring for cultural fit. What does that mean? It's a really easy way, it's a really it's a cop out of going, I don't really want to explain why I don't want you.
Sure.
We're doing it all the time. So sustainability is sustainability of life for the human and the more than human. We should separate them out. The UN's global goals, there's 17 of them, I think. Yeah, 17 global goals. And what you tend to find is people, organizations pick them off and go, I want to do it. We're going to focus on education. We're going to focus on poverty. Number 17, how I started my business is number 17 is about partnerships. And I went, what are the partnerships that I need to look at to be able to make sure that I understand how I am impacting and impacted by each and every one of those 17 global goals? That's sustainability.
Love that. How can you coach, whether it's an individual or a business leader, like how can you kind of evoke the importance of being mindful in these in large decisions like this? I think we all kind of fall victim to the allure of the short-term gains, but
Yeah.
to convince someone to kind of see this in a different lens of just overall impact and how everything kind of trickles down, every decision you make. How can you kind of teach that kind of thinking?
I've made a decision at the end of last year that what I was, because I've been public speaking and conferences and growing and learning for the last probably over 10 years, at least. Yeah, more than that. And what I realized is that increasingly the conferences I was speaking at were closed gardens. So they were only the people who worked in those organizations could go. And some of the feedback and the conversations I had were just valuable and people wanted to go deeper. So what I've done is last year, as I said, was about really discovering what's the next stage for me and discovered that I had the opportunity, went to Brazil, to spoke at two beautiful conferences and realized that that whole journey of going to Brazil is what we is known as a vision quest. This idea of we know them through the language of Austra, you know, Aborigine walkabout, and vision quests are these moments where usually somebody goes out into the wilderness on their own to go really inside and understand the big questions that they're usually afraid of asking themselves. And I realized that that's what last year was for me. And what I also recognized was that a lot of the content that I've produced through my talks is really impactful. And there are opportunities for people to deep dive into that. So what I've done is I have taken the most thought-provoking, impactful, kind of, you know, some of the stuff that I've talked about here, my way of pattern recognizing across these different spaces, and I've turned it into a 12-week one-to-one coaching program, which deep dives into some of these topics. And the way that I'm going to run it is that I'm going to do it really small, so you get my dedicated time. So ideally, four people kind of running in tandem, you know, at a time, and then maybe look. I mean, there's no deadline for application, so people can apply when they want. But I'm never going to take on more than four people really at the same time because I want to be able to dedicate the time. And so you get weekly coaching sessions, which are mentoring sessions. So we deep dive into the topics. I've put together resources of the stuff that I have read and will continue to read. Each week there will be a vision quest. And what I've done is I've made it really simple so that it fits into your busy timetable. So it's not anything extra you need to go and buy. It's just a slight reframing of some of the things that you already do. And the idea is that the vision quest help you embed some of the thinking for that theme. So I'm really excited. So that launches at the end of this week.
It's incredible. Wow. I can't even imagine the topics that are being covered. But it sounds like a much needed thing. I think.
I mean, one of the topics is alternative futurism. So, what's the impact of Afrofuturism and Arabic futurism and all of those things on how we approach design, how we approach technology, how we approach all of these things, systems and structures, bringing those things in and looking at what's the impact of surrealism in the world of decision making.
Absolutely fascinating. What do you just final question, but like regarding Seeds, which is this program, the program that you're speaking to, it's about to kick off. What do you think is what is like a successful 12-week course look like for someone, do you think?
So, great question. And it just made me think of a quote that I use that I, whenever I go to start writing something, a talk, whatever, or a work of art, is the purpose of a storyteller is not to tell you how to think, but to give you questions to think upon. So, as we go through the program, you are developing your own questions. And so, by the end of it, you come up with your own version of what type of ancestor do you want to be? Because that question is very personal to me. It may not resonate with other people, but the idea is that you come out of it at the end of the 12 weeks, you have that big question that you're asking yourself that you can use as your own North Star. And you're starting to recognize patterns in your world that may not make sense to me. But they're yours, that's okay. Because I think part of the problem we have is that everybody's heading to, or with being guided towards this idea of one North Star and one measure of success when everybody's different. Work out what yours is, and we definitely become a lot happier. Less imposter syndrome and less of all of that other stuff that we takes up so much space. So what makes me, what is my measure of success? That's it.
Love that. Absolutely inspiring.
Thank you.
Ada, thank you so much for joining. I've learned so much in these 30 minutes that we've been talking, and I can't wait to share it with everyone else. So appreciate being on the show, and thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, Kentaro.
And for our listeners, please tune in to the next episode of The A Word, brought to you by Abilio.